you know, or if I'm not actually, you know, hanging off the chandelier screaming like a hyena on the first night. I find that the men are not used to that. They're not used to someone expressing themselves. They're not used to someone, you know, not being like this pinball machine that can just press and she just reacts straight away. And I find that is a little bit because of that, that sometimes this conversation, they're like, well, every woman I've ever been with, they're always, you know, orgasm every time. And I'm just thinking, dude, like, that's factually not even possible. Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Ossa Bov, on the Tool for Dish It podcast. I'm Angie S., the founder of AngieS.com. That's Angie-S.com. Link in the show notes, as per usual. Listen, that's the place to go if you want to be part of my community, get involved with what I do, have direct access to me. You can also just go to my Linktree link, which is also in the show notes, and it's linktree.com/toolfordishit. And shit is actually spelled with S-H-I-T. There's no asterisk. So, wow. You know, Linktree, there's to go there. So, good for them. So if you've been listening to podcasts and it has just given you this bug, like it did to me like a couple of years back when I was listening to podcasts and I just had this bug and I was just like, oh my God, I want to, you know, I just wanted to have my own. I wanted to create one. I just didn't know where to start. And it was like the beginning of, you know, finding it all out. You can just go to the same links, go to my website, to my Linktree link, doesn't matter. And when you go there, you'll see, you'll have the option to find out how to get all your software and equipment, everything for under £100. That's all you need to start a podcast. You just need £100. That's all you need. Don't worry about everyone telling you you have to get the best this, the best that, the best this and that. No, that's not true. I still use the same equipment and it's all fine. Like, you know, you can always upgrade if you want. So I'll show you that. And then if you also want to learn how to edit, how to get guests, how to do the interviews, how to edit, how to upload onto Apple Podcasts, where to host your podcast, how to set up your microphone, etc., 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 I also show you those in some other more advanced workshops. So that's the place to go if you're interested in having your own podcast on a budget. And also, most importantly, if technology is not your jam, trust me, isn't mine either, I will show you how to get it all done in a simple way, okay? That's it. And then, I know that's like, whew, like a lot of promo by the sounds of it, isn't it? But anyway, please, if you actually do enjoy listening to this podcast and you haven't yet, please share it on, well, first of all, share it with your friends. You can also rate, review, subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or follow it on Spotify. For all of the other platforms, whichever way you show love is how you can support this show. The more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show, which means, you know, there are all these algorithms out there like Apple Podcasts and so on and Spotify. They'll actually push my show up if more people are sharing it, rating it, reviewing it, subscribing to it. You know, that's kind of how it works. It takes you 2 seconds to do and it's completely free. So I'd really appreciate that. You know, it just really helps me keeping on putting all this content out there for free. So today with my guest, Ossa Bov, who's a matchmaker focused on sexual compatibility, we cover, you know, what is good sex, how to communicate sexual desires and preferences with a partner, how to discover our pleasure with our partner, all the good stuff. So without further ado, let's begin. Welcome, Ossa.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm so excited. This is a Sunday and I think we're the 29th of November, I think, today.
Yes.
And so there's still a bit of a lockdown in London. So I am just super excited to have you on the podcast today to talk about sexual compatibility within matchmaking. You're a matchmaker. You are also a Scandinavian. And I have so many questions for you. So obviously sexual compatibility within matchmaking isn't something I've come across with other matchmaker. Two, it'll be great to talk about someone who also isn't from the country we live in. So both of us are not from the UK, but we live in the UK. And so that adds another element to dating and choice of partners sometimes. And you know, how do we navigate that? So yeah, so I have tons of questions for you. But before we dive in, please introduce yourself, where you live and what you do.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting to you today, all things about sexual compatibility. So my name is Åsa Båth. I'm the founder of Tailor Matched, which is a matchmaking agency focusing on sexual compatibility and overall compatibility. We and our members and many more deem that they are equally important, so it's time that we talk about it. I'm also a dating and relationship coach. So I coach men and women around confidence, you know, daring to be vulnerable with our emotion to find more fulfilling relationships and more fulfilling lives. So that's what I do in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really loved about you is that, you know, I can see that you're definitely someone who wants to empower others. So, you know, I followed you on social media for a while now, and I've been, you know, scanning your website. And, you know, I think it's a great element that you offer that other side too. But can I just ask you, like, how did you even get into this? Like, how did you get into matchmaking and especially matching sexual desires? Because that, you know, that's ballsy. I like it. Like, how did you get into that?
Thank you so much. So everything that we do at Tailor Match is really a reflection of my own life journey. In a prior life, I often find myself meeting partners who I was compatible with in life, but not sexually. And if I met someone that I was compatible with sexually, we didn't really match up on our relationship wants and needs and our life wants and needs. So I was going between this, like, you know, from one place to the other. And I thought to myself, oh, you know, sexual compatibility, I'm a very sexual person. That's something that's very important to me. I've always been very interested in sex and interested in intimacy, you know, from an early age. I remember reading, you know, the sex column on in magazines, like in Sweden. But I thought to myself, oh, I can probably not, you know, work with it. So I kind of put it to one side. So when I was about 30, then it was a lot of strands that came together in my life, A, around the real want of meeting someone who I was compatible with in life and in the bedroom. And as a 30-year-old, I was like, you know, the purpose in my life, I feel, is speaking up more around breaking taboos around sexual compatibility and sexual desires. And, you know, one thing led to the other. It started with a mind map that I wrote on a flight between London and Stockholm. And, you know, then Tailor Match was born a couple of years after. And today I work with incredible men and women who too believe that sexual compatibility is something that's important and, you know, help us on the mission to break taboo. So it's some really beautiful work.
Yeah, and you know, it is important because even for those who are not sexual beings, who don't feel like, some people are really happy to be in relationship without sex, that they just, you know, I don't know what the proper term or politically correct term is for that. But I remember it was I think you call yourself asexual, I think.
Yes.
That's the case, right? Yeah. So, you know, they just don't have the drive for it. And that's fine. That they appreciate other things. So even that, like, you know, that is, I mean, it's key to know about yourself, and it's key to know before you embark in a relationship and how you're going to navigate that. So, okay, but so I'm going to be a little bit nosy because, okay, so I like that you did this mind map between London and Sweden, and, you know, like, you're Swedish, so you're on your way home, you make this mind map, and then 2 years later, it's born. How, like, did you come across any resistance, like, you know, from family, friends, and even work? I don't know if you had any day job at the time or if you have one now, I don't know, but, like, Was there any resistance from others or yourself to, like, okay, let's, you know, to do this?
You know, when I started to really feel like, why are not more dating companies, you know, matchmaking agencies and dating apps talking about sexual compatibility, and me knowing how important it was to me and how hard it was to find it, inside I really felt this, like, strong passion and desire to do it. I've been very lucky that my family, you know, has been very and continue to be very supportive. And my mum, my sister and my grandma all follow me on social media. And even when I'm speaking about, you know, tantra workshops that me and my partner run, for example, my grandma is like, oh, I hope it went well. You know, so I'm very fortunate that it's I don't know, you know, maybe they had some tension behind that they haven't spoken to me about. But I continue to receive a lot of support from friends. They were like, yes, of course you were going to talk about sex. This makes so much sense. So I think my friends could have seen, you know, this coming to life way before I could, you know, make it a reality for myself. So that was just like common nature that when I said that this is what I want to do, they're like, yeah, you know, do it.
Yes. Okay. Oh, but that's fantastic.
Which has been absolutely amazing. I mean, I did, just before I set up Taylor Mash as well, I used to be a board director for a leading PR agency in the UK. I was the first female board director in that agency. And I decided to leave my the company that I used to represent a couple of years before I even knew that Taylor Match was going to be born, because I just decided to take a career break, and then that allowed the space to think about Taylor Matched. So I was lucky in that regard that I had the luxury to just take 3 months off and really just refocus on what I wanted to do. But I had huge like the tension that I felt in my body the day I was updating my LinkedIn profile to say that I was, you know, the founder of a company that speaks about sex. I thought, oh, what's people going to think? What's people going to say? My previous managers and directors and, you know, colleagues and team members, what are they all going to think? But again, that was just like when I hit, it took me like half a day to even just press the button to make a post live on LinkedIn. And my friends was like, just send it, just press the button, you know. And afterwards, even our HR director, she was like, oh, it makes so much sense. I can see, you know, you've always been, you know, having that like naughty side and glimpse in your eye. So it was actually real fun that, you know, like I've been very lucky in that people have been very supportive. I don't think my dad knows that I work in dating, but I am not the first, it's not the first thing I bring back to the dinner table, you know, the latest sexual desires that I found.
No, but it's good. No, but it's good that you have, like, you know, you obviously got good karma and people are supporting you. And I, you know, I think that's great. And, you know, it's, it is important because, you know, personally, I was with a matchmaker. I mean, I guess I'm still on their books, but I wasn't with a matchmaker. I think I joined, I think it was just maybe 3 years ago now. Mm. And I remember one of the things when during the interview, so they were like, they vet you for a few hours, like a long, really long interview. And, you know, at the end they ask, you know, about, so what you're looking for, what you're open to. And my thing is like, you know, I don't care about, you know, where the person's from. I just want a good person, but it's a good man. But obviously I have to have the sexual attraction. And one of the things that kept pushing on me, I felt, was that they were like, you have more chance if you go with older men. You know, and I was like, yeah, that one, but like they need to have, you know, they need to be, I want them to be dynamic, have energy, like, you know, because you can have a young 40-year-old and a really old 20-year-old, right? So like you just, it's not always as linear. And then, and I remember they were like, you know, I think at the times I was like in my, when I was in my late 30s, and then and I was like, they were like, you know, go up to 50. And I was like, oh, that seems like such a jump for me. I was so used to date people my age or younger. And I remember the question I asked was, yeah, but what's the sex like? That was my question.
I love that you asked that.
Yeah, because I was just like, I'm like, I'm okay if he's, if he's 50. I've never dated someone who was like, who was 50 at the time. And I still haven't actually. I was 50. And, but I need to know, like, what's the sexual stamina? Because, and I remember the person turned around and said to me, well, they can still go for a long time, but they may need a bit more time to recharge. And I was like, okay. But it's because I just did not want to, because I was felt like I was too young to let that part of my life go, you know?
Yeah. No, I love that question.
Yeah. And I don't feel I've arrived yet. I don't feel like I've actually, I haven't arrived yet. I know there's so much more to explore in that area.
Oh, yeah. And it's like never ending, you know? It's always, you know, often when we talk about sexual compatibility, I always say, like, it's never a done deal, you know, just because you're sexually compatible today, in 6 months' time, you might have like a new fantasy or storyline developing in your life, or you've gone to a workshop and it's like, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's, you know, it's important that it's talked about and that it's room to grow with someone.
Because it's such a state of mind as well. Because like you said, like, you know, I mean, if you're lucky, you may have like, you may actually both each other the sex from the beginning. I mean, for me, it takes a bit more time kind of thing. But it's like, if you enjoy in 6 months time, you may be bored. Like, oh, it's the same routine. Like, you know, it's yeah. that same, you know. So it always, like you said, like, it's like, you have to, it's like, it's an exploration, really.
Yes, absolutely.
So what, so can I ask, I'm going to ask you like the most dumb and obvious question maybe, but it's like, what is good sex?
So good sex is really when you can come together with someone and talk about it. So first of all, like, good sex happens before the bedroom. And yes. it's a conversation that we have so many times, you know, I think from the society and of course like porn, you know, a lot of people, including myself for a long time, was kind of led to believe that it's like you meet someone, there is some attraction, there is physical and sexual, you know, energy, and then it's like, oh, we end up in the bedroom or wherever you choose to have sex, and it's like everyone just know what to position to slide in, and then like 5 minutes later everyone comes and it's just like, and then it's done. You know, so it's really yeah. this thing of like, so good sex for me and like good sex from, you know, what we see in conversation that we have with so many people every day is like the want to be able to speak about what does good sex mean for them, and they want to be able to be with someone whereby you can talk about it. Okay, what turns you on, you know, what would you love in this you know, sexual experience, how do you want to feel, you know, what really turns you on, what are the absolute no-go zones, what do we not want to explore? Because once we have the ability to speak about it, you know, before the bedroom, once it happens, it is less room for surprises that we may feel like, oh, this doesn't really sit well with me. Mm-hmm. So that's really what I put good sex down to. Also, being present, to be able to be present when you're having sex, you know, foreplay, intercourse, you know, afterplay, aftercourse, like all these things, aftercare. Should I say? It's really to have the presence, you know, because I'm sure that you've been in a situation, and people who's listening, you know, in a situation whereby you're with someone but they're not really there, or like they mm-hmm. feel like it's kind of like self-serving. So yes. how can we speak about sex before the bedroom? How can we be really present when we are having sex? You know, and how can we also really give the pleasure how the person wants it, so it's not becoming like one-dimensional and self-serving.
What did you say? What was the last bit you said about the pleasure?
So it's not self-serving.
No, but just before, what did you mean? Like, so that the person is not, like, them pleasuring you is about you, not about them.
Yeah, so it's also yeah. about, you know, of course, our own, you know, sexual desires and what I would love, but it's also like you too. So what mm-hmm. does your partner want? How can you yes. give it to them? Yes. You know, so it becomes like it's a give and take without me giving from thinking they have to give something back. It's like, yes. how can I give something freely? You know, at the same times where you have spoken about what you would really love to try or what really turns you on, and, you know, good sex happens when it's like it's a flow of, you know, receiving and giving.
Yeah, and so it's funny because you said a few things that I want to add to it or ask you something about it. But, like, I want to start with the last bit, like, you know, like you're saying with the pleasure. Like, mm-hmm. I find that where sometimes where it becomes like this, almost like this power struggle, is when someone's ego is so strong that they just want to do what they think that you should like. And yes. when you guide them, when you try and guide them, well, I want it a bit softer, or I want it a bit harder, or whatever it is that you want, they take offense to it, and they feel like they're not good, or they're not good enough. And I don't think it's something they do consciously, and they're not trying mm-hmm. to be mean. They want to make you happy. But unfortunately, it's coming across, it's like, it starts to feel like pressure that you cannot ask for things. And it starts to feel like, oh, now I just have to like make sure that I come every time. You know, it feels yeah. like you feel like you're under pressure. It feels like it's a race, when actually that's the worst thing. Like, it should never be pressure. And I don't even think that, I'm obviously generalizing, but I've got a feeling that women maybe, or if someone is a bit more giving, does not do that to their partner. Like, I feel like, for me, it doesn't matter how long it takes for you. Like, I just want to make sure that you relax, you breathe. You don't have to climax if you're not climaxing. It's fine. Let's just you know, if you do, it's great. Like, and that I find is the best version, because it's like, the more you relax, the more you don't feel the pressure, you can be in your body, boom.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's a lot of, you know, conditioning in terms of how we are. And if we just generalize, you know, like when we speak to men, it's often around like sexual performance, this huge anxiety around sexual performance to like, you know, last longer, you know, control orgasm, you know, be able to make the girl come or the man come, you know. And it's a lot of conditioning around like the sexual performance, and even the word performance have led many of us feeling like it's almost like sex is like a tick box exercise. So, you know, I can come, you can come, we can both say, oh, we are really good in bed because like someone orgasmed. Yeah. And it's so much, you know, to the like to the end goal, to the climax, but it becomes very like race towards the end. And we also know that women have often been conditioned to feel like they always have to give feedback to, you know, the other person that they have sex with, because it's like we're kind of conditioned to not ask for what we want, you know, because not so long ago, you know, women couldn't just speak about what we want in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to kind of like do what we were told. And this is like still a huge part in our social conditioning about like, women should be like this, and they should always be grateful and thankful, and therefore shouldn't say anything, you know. We are conditioned to think that men always need to take initiative, and then they have to be like hard for like hours and be able to penetrate. You know, there is all these things, and this is why it's so important, and why I feel so passionate about, you know, having conversations like you and I are having today and with the community to just break down, you know, stigma and what we are led to believe sex should look like and feel like.
But that's it. You know, that's what you said about performance, male performance. It's true. They've definitely been under pressure about male performance for a very long time. But I feel like almost like now women were under this performance where we have to climax, and it has to be, you know, super loud. We have to also ejaculate now. We have to be, you know, we have to be happy with all the toys. We have to be, you know, it's a lot, you know, and then, you know, oh, if we don't come, it's like we're getting blamed for it. And it's like an issue, and it's this pressure. And it's not even that the worst bit out. It's like it's not even meant as a mean thing between two people who love each other, but it just becomes that. And it's like it needs to stop, because, you know, the more you try and put, I mean, I don't know, that's just me, but like the more you try and question me into coming, well, the longer you're gonna have to wait, because now I'm in my head. It's like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's absolutely, and that's like we need to like be able to relax into it, like stress, be it, you know, distress in life or stress towards you know, like an orgasm is the biggest block, as you rightly put, towards actually feeling pleasure and towards like wanting to have sex and towards like having an orgasm. And I know exactly what you mean in terms of like, you know, I was there for a very long time, and I was like, I looked like the girls that I saw in pornos. I sounded like them. I behaved like them. So a couple of months ago, I said to my partner, I do it, you know, I don't do it anymore, because a few years ago, I recognized that this was a learned behavior. And actually, I don't even know if I'm liking the sex I'm having or not. Oh, so this has been kind of like a big journey for me. Yeah. And a couple of months ago, I took it to like another level where I said to my partner that I was like, I'm not gonna make any sound in the next few weeks when we're having sex. And he was like, okay, cool. He was like, just out of interest, like, you know, why are you doing it? And I said, well, I don't know still to this day if I'm making noises to make you feel good or if I make noises because it's out of pleasure.
How did he take that? Because that's a lot of men would be really upset.
Yeah, no, he was like, okay, cool. You know, he was just interested to see like why I was doing it. But he was very, you know, very, very lucky to be with a partner who is very, you know, open-minded towards, you know, sex, sexual expression and, you know, exploration. When I mean exploration, it's not sexual positions. Like how we're feeling, you know, and how we want to be. So he was, he welcomed it very much, and it became quite hot actually, because it was like I wasn't allowed to make noise, and it was
it became a kink of its own. Like when they say don't move.
exactly. So that was actually quite fun.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned about, you know, talking, you know, like, to go back a bit, you mentioned about, you know, like, you know, talking about sex before you enter the bedroom or wherever yeah. it is that you have sex. Another thing actually I would add to that was that sometimes also it's like you don't always know. I find that different partners sometimes bring out a different side to you. And yeah. all of a sudden you're like, oh, I didn't like that with the previous person. And it's because it happened to me with my ex. It was like there was something that I was never into. I was like, I don't even know how people enjoy that. I'm not really into it. It was nothing like, nothing really, not even, it's nothing kinky. It's very super vanilla. But I was like this, I was like, nah, I don't even know. It's just boring. And, but then with him, I really enjoyed it. And I was like, and I remember the first time we did that, I turned around to him and I said, well, I didn't know I liked this. But he actually started laughing. And so I think sometimes, I don't know, sometimes maybe your taste evolves or changes, sorry, the taste changes. And maybe sometimes other partners, there's certain things that you enjoy more with them because of maybe how they do it. Or I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely like, you know, it can sound a bit woo-woo with this, but it's definitely different energies between like yes. different chemistries and different connections between people. And, you know, as we mentioned earlier, it's like this like sexual compatibility is always an ongoing journey because, and this is why we always encourage people to have like a curious mind towards, you know, our sexual desires. If there's something new that comes up for us, okay, what's the feeling that we really enjoy that, you know, maybe what sexual expression would that you know, manifest as? And it's also interesting that something that comes up a lot for people that I work with and for our community is the trust, that the more trusting and a stronger foundation two or more people can build with each other, I certainly think, and I see a lot of examples of this where it's like we can go even deeper into our sexual expression.
Yes.
And therefore, yes. you know, new sexual desires may be able to be discussed where before we may have feel you know, judging ourselves, you know, mm-hmm. maybe we feel judged by a partner, which means that just like locks down the expression mm-hmm. and the curiosity.
Yeah.
So that's really beautiful that you were able to, you know, just explore something different and just being able to say that, oh, I haven't really found this a turn on before. And now I do, because
yeah.
I think a lot of people, we can become very, if there is something new within our, you know, that we want to try or something that we find to be a turn on, it's like, oh, but I didn't like this before. What does that mean about this relationship? What does that mean about myself? You know, we create so much meaning when sometimes it's just is, you know, it's just a fact, you know, so that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I think regardless how many people are trying to make it PC, sex and love is not politically correct. It doesn't have to be. Like, this is where we express the most truest basic nature that we almost don't have any, that we actually do not have any control over. So whatever you like, whatever you enjoy, it's not to be translated literally, you know.
Yeah.
Like even like somebody said, you know, like in the sub-dumb world, you know, It goes across, like you see people from all backgrounds enjoying being sub or dumb, you know. It has
yes.
nothing to do. Sometimes it's a transcending thing. Sometimes it's a therapeutic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people trying to put too much meaning. It's like, well, does this feel good for you? Are you enjoying it? Are you
yes.
consenting? Well, then everyone else can stay out of it. Like, it's nobody's
exactly.
business. And it's love and sex is not PC. And people are trying to over politically correct this
yes.
world. And it's an overcorrection now. And I think we need to just chill out. Like,
chill out and have more sex.
Exactly.
Yes.
I must say, I'm not one to say, I'm having zero sex now. But like, I'm just have more love. Is, you know, it's,
yeah.
it's, I think sex is also an expression of love. Whether it's someone that you barely know, or whether it's someone you've been with for 50 years, it's an expression of who you are at your most vulnerable moment. And
yes.
that in and of itself is actually sacred. And I think everybody else needs to just stay out of it, is what you like.
Yeah, it's your own, you know, it's your and your partner's
yeah.
business. And I think it's, you know, as you say as well, with, you know, when it comes to like our sex life, you know, it's no, it is absolutely, it's so beautiful. And it's such a turn on when you see, when your partner have been able to explain how they want to feel, you know, what they would like to explore and what they want you to do to them. And you go in, you know, with consent to do that. And they are just like in so much pleasure. You can hear their breathing and you can see their body. And it's like, it like nothing makes me happier. It is like the, it's like a nice feeling to be able to give to someone, as you say, you know, that's also like formed in love, you know, to be able to give something to someone freely. And I think, you know, the added step to that is to be able to give it without the need to, you know, receive. It's not like a transactional, it's, you know, as you mentioned, it's like it's out of love and it's because the person want this and you are able to give it to them.
I think also like that thing of like, you know, not expecting it in return. I think that's something that also comes once you're in a relationship, because you know, you trust that it's like, you know that the, you know, it doesn't have to happen on every Tuesdays and third. It just comes around whenever it comes around. You know, it's not something that you have to measure. It's why I think maybe it's like at the beginning, let's say like the beginning you're with someone and you realize that you're the only one giving them pleasure and they're never returning it. You're like, it feels, you know what I mean? There's an imbalance, right? But I think most people do usually know that, you know, it comes in roundabouts. It's not something that you need to calculate or keep tab on, sorry, to keep tab on. But that's, you know, that's when, you know, it's like, you know, that's the only way I can explain it.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, and it's very important that also like it is talked about. And I think, you know, throughout a relationship, no matter how long you've been together or like the intensity of the sex life or, you know, how frequently you have it, is it, you know, something that we do recommend to people who I coach are in relationships, and something that I do in my own relationship is that every month we sit down for 2-3 hours and we talk about what's going well in our relationship, what's going well in our sex life, you know, the moment we felt most loved, maybe something we want to change. And then we also speak about every aspect of our relationship from a scale from 1 to 10. What do we feel like our, you know, intimate side of our relationship is like? What's our spiritual side? What's our like self-expression? And that leaves a room to be able to just freely speak about, you know, how we feel things are and what we want more of, which is can be very scary and vulnerable to go into those conversations. But it's really beautiful because it actually allows us to talk about it, you know, from the earliest convenience. If something is that maybe, you know, one person would feel like I've been giving and giving and giving and I don't feel like I'm receiving anything, you know, to a point that we can start to feel, frustrating. And if we don't speak, and if we don't speak about it, that becomes resentment. And resentment often manifests in that we stop the intimate side and we stop the, you know, sexual side and we stop the communication.
Oh, well, listen, resentment is the quickest route to being to a turnoff. I mean, if you feel drained and if you feel like you're always the one, and it doesn't have to be on the sexual front, it could be emotional support. Let's say you feel like you're always there for the person, you're always listening to them, you're always there. And then when it's you don't feel there's room for you to speak and stuff. You start to feel this crush and this pressure on your soul, and little by little you're going to start not desire the other person because there's no room for you. So how is there even room for your sexuality, for your expression? Exactly. Because you're literally being muzzled a little bit. That's the feeling, you're being muzzled, and it's never a nice feeling. So I think to keep those conversation helps, you know, not build the resentment. But it's like how to have this conversation. That's a whole other ball game, right? Because it's like saying, you know, we all know that communication is key, but it's more like, but what does that even mean? Because it's a bit like saying, you know, to have good surgery, you need a scalpel. But it's like, well, if you just have a scalpel and no training, you're going to create a lot of damage. So it's like saying, that's a bit what that means when people say communication is key. It's like, but how do we talk? Even like, how do we say even, I just want to explore tonight. I don't know what I'm into. Just let's improvise. Or maybe I feel like I've been giving you support, but you're not giving it back to me. Like there's it's like, how do we communicate without sounding entitled and feeling and putting pressure on someone else, you know?
And especially when it comes to, you know, our sex life, which I guess we're talking about here, but in any aspect, is to, because speaking about what's working and maybe what's not working in our sex life is a very scary, our guard goes up, you know, because we give ourselves like our naked, you know, body and soul to someone to, so then to hear that we want it different, it can be, you know, hurtful. And as you talked about earlier, it's like the ego comes up to be like, you know, rejection and all these things. So the best thing to start these conversations is to start talking about what's already going well. So obviously, you know, don't lie, only talk about things that you genuinely feel is going well. You know, this could be once you're in the bedroom together or outside the bedroom as well. But, you know, when you're in bed together and they are stroking you in a particular way, or like you're doing something that they're doing something, or you are doing something that, you know, you really like, what you can do is like, oh, I really like, this feels really good when you do this. I really like it when you touch me like this. You know, it's such a turn on when you do X, Y, Z, you know, I would love for you to do more of that. Most of the time you don't even have to say I would love for you to do more of that, because, you know, like feedback fuels growth, and when we can have positive feedback, that also fuels more of that from our partner. It's very easy to go into a relationship or like our sex life and point out what's not going well, when in fact if we can speak more about what's going well, you know, we get more of that. If it wasn't the fact that if we feel like we have started to communicate, you know, this is something that I would love, you know, I would love for you to do more of that. If it doesn't happen, then I would speak about that like outside, you know, the bedroom, if possible, in order to again start with what's going well. And I would say something like, you know, something that I feel is important to me, or something that I would really, you know, love in our love life or our sex life is X, Y, Z, you know, and just leave a bit of space for the other person to be able to respond to that as well. It's important that we come from, as we would know in, you know, communication, to always come from ourselves rather than going, you don't do this or you do this. It's coming from a place of like, you know, it feels so amazing when you do this. I would really love for you to do more of X, Y, Z. You know, something that I've been really interested to try is this fantasy. Would you like me to tell you what about it I find to be a turn on? It's like, how much can we own the conversation as a starter point, and then open the, you know, open the floor essentially for our partner or partners to share what comes up for them. And it's also to be prepared that if we speak about something in our sex life that we want to be different, that maybe it's not going to be met with like, oh, hooray, you know, this is amazing, thank you so much for sharing. It may just be, you know, they may become a little bit quiet, they might, you know, then it's like we need to ask our partner like, what do you need, you know? Or maybe we see that they're not reacting in a certain way, it's like, you know, just to, maybe we just need to say like, just to, you know, make a point that, you know, I really love our sex life, you know, obviously don't lie only if you do, but, or like, these are the things that I feel is working really well, it's just a couple of things that I would love for us to do more of, because this is how it makes me feel.
Yeah, but do you know, I think maybe it goes wrong so often, those conversations, like I feel this conversation is because men, I date men, so I can only give it from that perspective. But my experience is that when I tell a man, or I'm trying to explain to a man, you know, or if I'm not actually, you know, hanging off the chandelier screaming like a hyena on the first night, I find that the men are not used to that. They're not used to someone expressing themselves. They're not used to someone, you know, not being like this pinball machine that can just press and she just reacts straight away. And I find that is a little bit because of that, that sometimes this conversation, they're like, well, every woman I've ever been with, they're always, you know, orgasm every time. And I'm just thinking, dude, like, that's factually not even possible. I don't say that, obviously, but I just say, it's just like, they're just so used to, I think it doesn't do other women or other people in the world any favor when people, you know, not being able to, don't express the true desires or fake it, which, and I understand why people fake it, because it's, you know, in a way it's easier.
That it releases pressure. to come.
It really is that pressure, yeah.
It is.
And
yes.
So I think like it's almost like important that from my perspective, like, you know, like for me, like it'd be great if more men out there understood that it is normal, that we are not ecstatic the minute they just touch us and penetrate us. Like, you know what I mean? It's like there was a bit of work to be done, you know, just because they do it the way they did it with their ex, basically, doesn't mean that we're going to be turned on the same way. And I think that's where the issue comes in. It's like, well, it worked with the last girl and maybe actually worked with the fifth girl before. And then the four that came after her just stayed quiet and pretended. And then you're the first one speaking up. And they're like, well, I don't understand. Five other women were really happy with movements and the way I touched them. And I'm like, yeah, well, what do you say? It's like, well, it's not working for me. So, and I think that's the problem, is like too many stay silent. And then all of a sudden you express yourself and then bam, it's like they don't know how to, like we say in Danish, romet, you know, they can't contain it in their world. It's like brain explosion.
Yeah, and you know, this is why, you know, it's very important that we do keep this conversation around like sex education, because like sex education is very poor in, you know, many countries. Yeah. Yeah. And we only speak about sex around like, you know, a disease or like how to, you know, when we have babies and outside that. So this is why I'm so grateful to be able to do like the sex education work. And we bring in a lot of sex educators on our platform, and I'm so pleased to see, you know, men and women to be able to really show up and like wanting to learn and like relearn everything about like foreplay, you know, how to touch. And I think this is, you know, on the question around, you know, what is good sex, and this is why like presence comes up so, you know, strongly for me, because as you say, you know, just because we've had great sex with someone else and now we're with a different person, well, presence creates that awareness towards like how are the person responding to how I'm touching, you know, how is the person responding, because otherwise it's very easy to go into like autopilot. And this is where people really feel like the deeper connection is lacking. And this is because we've done it the way we've always done it, because this is a tried and tested method. And what's missing, well, is the human connection of what is happening right in front of you.
Exactly.
So this is a big thing. And we speak about touch, you know, so much. And this is actually a really good way to actually, if we feel like it's becoming difficult to maybe talk about, you know, this is not working for me, or I want you to do X, Y, Z, the perfect way is to show them. Like mutual masturbation can feel very vulnerable, but it is the best way to show your new partner or your existing partner how you like to be touched.
When you say mutual masturbation, you mean like that you masturbate yourself in front of the other person and they do it themselves? Okay, yeah.
So that's such a good way to show, because, you know, every woman is different, every man is different. So that is a really good way to just show like how we like to be touched, what type of strokes. Obviously, the pressure is hard to show, but that is something we can just add to it.
That's the hardest bit, is the pressure, I find.
Yeah.
Because I think all women, we're so different down there. Some of us need a lot of pressure and some of us need to barely be touched.
Yes, you know, exactly.
So I think I understand why it's confusing for men. And I think in my experience, you know, any partners I've had, they've actually always wanted to, you know, sometimes the initial reaction is like a bit of they're like, oh, you know, because they feel inadequate. But it's like they're always willing to, I find that men are actually very willing to want to please you and to learn, because they also understand that they don't know. The female body for men feels sometimes like a minefield and a completely different country to them. They're like, well, it worked there. Everyone's so different. And it's like, but it's just, I think the more we have this conversation, I think the more they can realize that the next time a man hears a woman or vice versa, that it's not a personal attack. It really isn't. It's just that we're so different. And it's like you're learning a different engine and that's it. And you a different mindset, someone else, how they function. And it's not personal. And I think that would just help to erase some of the initial friction and disappointments.
Yeah, and it is, you know, it's coming back to like that, like sexual performance and like, I'll be good enough. And we're putting so much emphasis around like having to, you know, get someone off. And if we don't, you know, what does it mean about us? Like, are we shit in bed, or like, we're not good at that? And it's, as you say, it's like, how can we instead, like, how can we instead just like bring up the conversation about like what we want? Like 2 weeks ago, me and I ran an event with one of my colleagues and partners at Taylor Matched around what women want. And it was 25 men turning up to that event. And it was a really beautiful space whereby we just very freely spoke about, you know, obviously it was only one workshop, 2 hours. It's only so much you can say about what women want. But, you know, they really turned up to that event to like willingly wanting to like what's important to a woman. Like, how does she feel seen? When does she feel heard? How does she want to be touched? You know, what can we say? What shouldn't we not say? It's just like, and we continue to really see like men and women showing up to our event, wanting to learn, wanting to have a different outcome. And I guess it's like, if I would meet someone who would not be willing to have a conversation, you know, either about our sex life or otherwise, who just like, but this is how what it's always worked for me, I guess I would just like question his growth mindset in a relationship.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
His or her. It's not just.
Absolutely. You know, when you said like you had that workshop, one thing I would have, like, I don't know, you may have said that to them, but one thing, like, if I could put in my two cents, is that as a woman, there's, for me, there's nothing more, I mean, so far anyway, for me, there's almost nothing more of a turn on than a man who's like, you know, especially when they're big guys, you know, like a big guy, they can just be tender with you. And they just want to, you know, they want to support you. They're like your biggest champion, you know, they're just like, they want to protect you. And I don't mean like in the old fashioned way or whatever, it doesn't matter. But like, I just, you know, you feel that they just want to be your big bear to protect you, and you feel safe with them. And I think there's something quite unique when you are with a man who's really strong, a strong character. You know, he's out there slaying dragons, like, you know, like you and I, we're out there slaying our own dragons as well with our businesses. But they're out there slaying dragons, they go home, but then they have, you can see that tenderness they have for you, you know, and they just, they're your biggest cheerleader. And that is very hard to find, I think, to have someone who is strong, good, and who's also your cheerleader, because often men just want to fix things, you know, so it's a hard thing. I don't know.
And this is why we come in as well, you know, and this is why it was so, like, Taylor Match really set up as a matchmaking company, you know, but very quickly I realized, like, what's the point of matching two people who on paper and, you know, chemistry wise are like such a good fit, but behind the scenes we have things that works, like our ego, you know, limiting beliefs, you know, fear of rejection, fear of love, all these things in the background that kind of like holds us against having the really fulfilling relationship that we know we can have. And in coaching, a lot of these conversation comes up, and for women, and like it's proven within the like feminine energy, within the tantra community, you speak a lot about like feminine energy and masculine energy that is not gender specific, they're just energies. And the feminine energy and like the feminine wants to feel, you know, what you said there, like seen, you know, and understood. So it's not like heard, it's really understood. Because once a man, like once a feminine can feel like really understood, you know, as you're describing that, whatever her, you know, how his life looks like, you know, then we can start to like open up and like build trust. So there is a lot of conversations around this when it comes like emotionally aware of our own needs and how can we communicate them, and being with someone who we believe is open-minded enough and done work on their, you know, healing themselves, you know, because like everyone is walking around with like wounded, you know, inner child inside, you know, so how can we really start to communicate that? Because it's something that we hear, you know, over and over again from women who wants to be really seen, understood, like trusted. And I read somewhere that you know, women can never have enough love and men can never have enough freedom. So men often wants to feel like they, you know, they don't feel like restricted. They can feel free in who they are, or like their expression and all this thing. And it's beautiful when it comes together.
It's interesting because it's, you know, and sometimes it also transmutes a little bit, because like for me, I don't like to feel like I'm suffocating. Like I can quickly feel like I'm it's like, that's not, so I understand man's need for freedom. But I think a lot of the things, like, you know, like you said, like with wounds and stuff. And I think if I was to say to the listeners, you know, like a way to find out that it's that, you know, your wounds, your childhood wounds, and then, you know, things that you need to, the inner work that you need to do.
Yeah.
Usually you can find the symptom is like strong reactions, you know, and we can see them now online, like it's gone free fall. People just react over everything, anything. Yeah. There's no discernment. People take things at face value. There's no critical thinking. And unfortunately, it's become this disease now. And I think but we can start at home. And I think if we can feel these strong reactions out of the blue, that's disproportionate, that's what it is. And you need to, it's like a gift. It has nothing to do with the other person.
No.
Just look at it. Feel it, feel what's happening. No, trying to understand that feeling, wait a little bit. And then, but through relationships, if you're with someone who wants to, I guess, fight for you is maybe a strong term, but really is like you have to want to fight for the relationship, because you will come across issues. And I think if you can come together and grow together, that's where the healing as well come from. And then people expect someone to make them happy, but that's bullshit, because relationship, some people, their beginning is really hard. For some people it is year 5, some people it is at year 17 or whatever it is. They have their things that the real struggle come out, and so that's when the healing comes through. But it takes a bit of, you know, growing pain. And it's not, you know, it, once you go through those pain together and you've been, that's vulnerability, because that's real vulnerability. Yes. And you've come through it and that person still there and loves you, that's when I think happiness starts to really happen as well, you know, like where you can start to say happiness in a relationship, because it's something you've created together, but it's not something you can expect. People think, oh, well, I'm not feeling excited when I see them anymore. It's like, yeah, well, maybe look at what's going on for you, you know,
yeah,
a coping mechanism, you know, you're pushing them away really. So there's a lot, I mean, that's a whole other conversation, but.
Yes. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that, you know, I'm really glad that you bring those things up. And but I sort of wanted to see a little bit, like, because obviously now that's what you do, right? You talk with your, like, do you call them your clients, people who are in your matchmaking agency?
How
do you,
members.
Members, okay. So yes. With your members, obviously, you know, you get to, I don't know how many you get to, you know, how often you get to hear about people's sexual desires. But like on a lighter note, like what have been, would you say, like, what have been the most challenging, and for lack of a better word, sexual requests to match, or sexual preferences to match? Like, what have been the more, I don't know if you're allowed to even say it, but like, what have been the most, like, unusual that you're like, how am I even going to find a match for?
Yeah, you know, something that comes up like over and over again, like, I speak about sex every day, and other people talk to me about their sex life every day, which is a really nice place to be able to have these conversations. And what's interesting is that more often than not, people who come to us, they're like, okay, they've had a conversation with me, you know, and the team, and they filled out what we call the suitability profile and how we match people, which is like a set of questions. It's not an algorithm. It's just like some data and like some information for us. And the second questionnaire is all about sexual preferences. It's like nearly 80 questions around our sexual preferences. And afterwards, we have another call with them to be like, how was that for you? Was it anything that came up for you? Anything you want to add? And then some people, you know, most people are like, oh, I filled it in. And yeah, I really wondered, like, do you think you will be able to find me someone? And we were like, yes, of course. You know, even when it comes to like any sexual preference that we have come across, it's never been anyone will be like, oh my days, I have no idea how I'm going to do this. But often people almost like qualify themselves out before starting the journey. And okay, this is also like, this is also like, and it's nothing, you know, different. Like, it's nothing, you know, like unusual. It's just like a sexual preference that we see so much with other members, but because I guess they haven't been able to openly speak about it.
You don't really put down your Instagram bio or in your or in your Hinge bio going, hey, so okay, so let me turn this question around then. How so that the listeners and myself don't feel like, oh, this is weird or whatever. Like, what are the things that people put down when they say, you know, what, I mean, what is the question even? Is it like, what's your sexual preference? Or like, what do you like? What's your kink? Or like, what's the question and what do people reply?
Yeah, so there is, so basically the questions goes into like, what I would like to do to my partner and what my partner does to me.
Okay.
And that is everything from like having sex outside, listening to like romantic music, aggressive music, spanking, dressing up, threesomes, orgies, leather, like it's all these things. So it's like a lot of different examples, and they can then just tick, you know, yes, I do this often, or like, no, I've never done it, but I want to try it. So we kind of get to, so it's not just yes, no, it's a few nuances in order to really capture where they are.
Yeah, because people who actually have fantasies, but they've never played them out.
Exactly. So it's not based on what we've done, it's based on what we would like to do. So just because, as you point out there, just because we haven't done it doesn't necessarily mean it's not a sexual fantasy or like a sexual desire, should I say. So it's, yeah, it's a really good, and then we talk about like tantra and like different power play, which is, and it's like more than.
So when you said like, power play, like, what you
so that's more around the whether we are more dominant or submissive, and like what dynamic are we looking for within that as well. So it's a very thorough way of getting to know someone and for us to be able to have the conversation. But it's really interesting that more often than not we hear people going like, oh, do you think you'll be able to find me? And we were like, ah, if only people could speak more freely about this aspect, people would realize how normal it is and how many people share their sexual compatibility, you know. But this is what we're here for, and just this is why we're driving a much, much bigger conversation than which you probably have seen on our Instagram, that we are just driving a bigger discussion outside our matchmaking services.
Yeah, because you mentioned a lot about, I mean, I've seen some posts around like vulnerability.
Yes.
Just before, because I wanted to ask you about that, but just before I go into that, so I have one last question around the sex bit.
Yes.
So do your members or people around that you meet do not surprise you anymore around their sexual desires? You feel like there's never anything new that comes up?
There are new things coming up, but I guess like they're fairly similar to one another, you know, so far. It might be that someone have more of a particular foot fetish, and some people may like, you know, more into the BDSM or like me into the kink or into the tantric world. So we tend to be able to see like different, you know, groups of members who enjoy, you know, similar things around those aspects, I will see. But for some reason, and I guess, you know, I've always been very, as I mentioned, you know, I read the sex columns from a very early age. You know, I have always been very interested in sex, and I've always been very interested in people.
But I think, well, I mean, there are things that have come, I mean, so I've always obviously been in, I've been interested, especially for someone who I don't really have a lot of sex, like, because I'm most of the time I'm single, you know, like I don't really go out there and have like, you know, one night stands. It's not really, I don't really enjoy it. So, you know, if I'm not in a relationship, you can basically guarantee I'm not having sex. So it's like, but I've always been very curious, and I talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, but there are things that I've still found out that was like, whoa, I'm like, whoa, people do that. So, you know, obviously there's like, but now everyone knows about, you know, obviously there's like water sports where, you know, people,
yes,
like, but there's also the number two sport, and that's been around for a while, where people put in the freezer. I don't know if you ever heard about that.
No, I haven't actually.
Exactly, yeah. But there's also like a few years ago, I went to Comic-Con. I was helping them with like a competition. I was taking pictures for them, and you know, I found out whilst at Comic-Con, because I was like, there's a very sexual vibe here.
Oh, nice.
But there's actually also fantasy. Some of them knew that they told me about this, about how they do the, it's, I can't remember how they call it, but it's like a fur thing. So they, dress up as animal, furry animals, costume, and that's their kink.
Yeah.
But I can imagine those are not like, they're not every day. I mean, I guess like, you know, in certain environment, there will be more. But I find there's always something new that I'm like, what people do? I'm like, oh, well, okay, I didn't know this. You know, and obviously like, you know, lately, like women pegging men has become very, it's become very much into the mainstream media now. So I always find that something I'm like, oh, is this what we do now?
Yeah, no, there is so much, you know, and this is why like the sex menu, you know, is vast nowadays, because you have allowed, you know, these like so many companies and through social media being able to talk about it. And I know what you mean. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, this is a thing, you know, what does it? And it's just like having that. And that's why I think it's a very good mindset towards just like being curious without going. You know, we talk about this when we talk about how to share sexual desires as well, that, you know, it must always, you know, start with us. But like, how can we create that safe space in order for people to freely share that? Even if, you know, you were to tell me something that I would like never dream of doing, the trick is not to go like, you know, just check in with your face expression and don't go like, oh my God, ugh, I would never do that. Even if I would never, ever, ever want to do it, I might just be like, oh, what about that really turns you on? Oh, have you tried it? How was it for you? What was your first experience? To you just show, you know, respect towards the person and trust and that like open space to be able to, and not shame people, you know, and it's like always checking, because it might just be like, you know, you're down, you know, once we're allowed, you know, you're down the pub or like you're at the restaurant, whatever, one of your friends shares something and someone go like, ugh. You know, it can just be a little throwaway comment and that person have no idea how much it's actually taken for that person to start to open up. And all it takes is like one comment, one facial expression for the person to close down again. So it's like, how can we continue to have that, you know, safe and open-minded conversation, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Like, but I think part of it is also, I think if you're the person who are going to, you know, say something that you know already is going to have a bit of shock value and unusual, it's important to read the room. And I guess you have to come prepared that not everyone's going to be into it. And I think that's okay. It's like you have to also accept that let's say if your kink was water sports.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not my thing, but let's say it's water sport. And as someone I'm dating, you know, wants to share that with me, that person has already had this conversation in their mind for years. This is not new to them. They've processed it, because maybe at the beginning they've maybe gone through the whole shame and guilt stuff or whatever they had to do to process it. And then they became very comfortable with it. And then they became so comfortable with it that they were happy to divulge it with their partner, because this is an important part of the sexual landscape and they want to experiment it. So they've gone through a journey that's maybe have taken anything from a few months to 10 years. I don't know, you know? But so when that person comes in and then tells someone, that person's not even warmed up, doesn't even know what's going to happen. I think the person who shares any information needs to understand that the other person, that's their first time. And you cannot be offended if that person actually does make a face or say something that you may not, that you didn't want in your head, because in your mind, you've already prepared yourself for this. That person hasn't. It's a bit like dropping a news that you've known a deep secret, even if it's nothing, but let's say a secret, and you suddenly tell somebody, you know, it's like I understand try not to shame the other person, obviously, who's opening up. But the person who's opening up has to take responsibility by understanding that they've processed this. The other person, they haven't.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why, like, as questions such as, like, when we open up about our sexual desires, if it's like, oh, this is something I'm really into, this is something I would love to try, instead of asking for the other person to have to say something, because as you rightly point out, you know, we might just be like, oh my God, I don't know what to say or how to react.
Yeah.
So as the person who owning the story, a simple, you know, add on to that is simply to say, you know, would you like me to tell you what I found to be a turn on? Even that is just like you kind of continuing your story without the need for the other person to have to step in you know, yep. and say something as well. But as you say, you know, sometimes it's, you know, sexual or not, when it comes up something in a relationship. And, you know, as you say, you know, we've had time to process it. And this is why something we speak about a lot is like, how can we create space and just kind of a bit of like a pause button? Because sometimes we don't know how we're going to react. And if there is something, and, you know, we must, you know, try to just like, see how we show up. But equally, like, if we don't know exactly what to say, we don't have to say like, okay, cool, yeah, let's do that. If we are unsure, then it's like, oh, you know, thank you for telling me. You know, I can only imagine maybe this was like, you've been thinking about it a lot. You know, I really enjoy, you know, I really love that you share this space or whatever is true for you. You know, I haven't actually thought about this before, and, you know, it's very new to me. Do you mind if I'm just going to go away and like have a think about it? Or do you want to continue talking about it now to just see like, how can you create that permission to allow some space to then insert how you actually feel? It doesn't have to be like, okay, you said something, I now have to say something, and then we need to commit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That. And I think the person who actually divulges something new, whether it's water sport or BDSM or whatever it is, or just actually missionary, I don't know, maybe that's a shock for some people, who knows? But like, you know, to also like, not only like to understand the person, that's the first time they hear it, but to actually even just, I would just, that's my advice, I would just say like, just actually already volunteer to them and say, listen, I know this is the first time I'm talking to you about this. You know, you don't have to react straight away. Just, you need time. You can have as much time as you need to process. Like, we can talk again about this next week or in 2 weeks. And just I'll wait for you to come to me. That's
exactly.
It. Like, perfect. I think it's the whole thing about expectation, isn't it? And people's neuroses. And people are expecting, you should just accept me for who I am all the time. It's like, it's not about them not accepting you. It's that they just need to absorb the news. That's it. And it's like, just let the person absorb the news and then give them a minute. People want people to go through a 10-year process in 2 minutes.
Like,
that's just not
going
to happen.
Exactly.
You've had your whole life to understand what you like. And then like 2 minutes. And it's a bit, you know, it's a bit entitled. And you know, it's just a bit the temperature of the world at the moment, which is annoying. But it's, I think just being a bit nicer sometimes is kinder.
Compassion.
Compassion, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, in terms of like matchmaking now, I don't know what it's like for your members, but I was just wondering, you know, both you and I, we're not from the UK. We're here now. I mean, I've been here for 20 years. I don't know how long you've been here. But like, we've both come from somewhere else, grew up somewhere else, and we're here. And I was just wondering if there was any advice that maybe you give your members or maybe that you give friends, I don't know. For those who like us aren't from here, but obviously we have made a life here.
Mm.
But maybe, you know, do we need to know whether we want to stay here in the UK or whatever country people are listening from? So so let's say if you're not from the country you live, and do we need to know whether we want to stay in this country or if maybe will the right partner be open to move country with us if maybe one day we want to go back to our own native country? Like, is it something that we need to know from the get-go? Is it worth talking about it from the beginning? Or is it something that evolves naturally? Like, what do you, what's your experience? Like, what do you say about that?
Yeah, so what I would say from that is always like, what's our, like, you can never know for certain unless you really know, right? But then I guess this question isn't for you. But if you're not sure, it's kind of like, what's your intention? So, for example, if I share my own story, so like from the very early days of me being here, I knew that I was going to be here, you know, for a little bit of time. I had no idea what's going to be. I keep saying 12 years, I think, in this chat between you and I think it's practically maybe 14, maybe 15 years. So I'm losing track.
That you've been here?
In the UK, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so I kind of like in the beginning, I didn't know. I still don't know, you know, like the intention is that, you know, I want to like explore the country and like we'll see how things go. But if you know that like your intention is to always go back, you have like a timeline on like how long you want to be in the UK, then I would just be honest about yourself with that first and foremost. And if you equally know that you want to stay here forever, you know, then just know that. And if you are knowing that you want to stay here forever, you're just going to be here for 2 years, or you're going to just play and see what happens, I would just bring that into your awareness on the dating journey. I don't think I would talk about it, you know, on date one, because it's still kind of, it's a lot of commitment for someone, you know, we don't know whether we are even clicking or not. So the first date is kind of like, just focus on the connection, you know, maybe after a couple of dates, just, you know, focus on the connection, see how you make, how you feel about the person, you know, asking questions and all of this. But if it starts to feel like actually this is starting to become serious, I get a lot of, you know, feelings for this person, if it's like they have feelings for me and your intention is to go back next year, then I think it's very important that we do talk about it, because it's the other person's life too. And equally, if it's like the conversation continues and you continue to date and it's like you've been together for, you know, like maybe years, I don't know, you know, whatever timeline, when you start to feel like you guys are talking about, you know, moving in together and things like that. If you meant to stay here the whole duration, then, you know, happy days. Again, if you're feeling like, actually, I thought I wanted to stay here, but something has changed in my life, you know, how would you feel about, you know, or would you be open about living elsewhere? You know, so I think it's always coming back to like, what's true for us, what's our intention with staying here, and how open, you know, can we be in that journey with someone where we feel like we genuinely, you know, want to create a future with. I think I wouldn't have gone on every day to be like, just so you know, I'm not sure how long.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just think, you know, I think like for me, this has been sort of like a question of like, you know, well, where do I feel at home? Where are my roots? Because I've always been a foreigner wherever, you know, I lived. Like, even when I didn't grow up in Denmark, which is where my mum is from. I grew up in Belgium.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lot. But I feel like for me, what matters the most is the people I'm surrounded with. That's what my home is. Obviously, lockdown 2020, you know, the reason why I'm bringing this up is that I find that a lot of other of my friends, whether we call ourselves settlers, expats, foreigners, whatever, it doesn't matter. We just come from a different country. You know, I don't care what the right word is. Who knows now? I don't even know what I'm supposed to say. But so it's like, for us, I found that like we started to go, well, it feels like, what's the point of being, especially in like in London, big city, you know, you don't get a lot for your money. Like the life is expensive, like quality of life for anyone who's had a Scandinavian lifestyle or even from Europe, to be quite honest, like it's very expensive here. You need a lot of money to have any kind of space. And with lockdown, if you don't see people, you kind of figure, well, what's the point? You know, it's like, I think like, and so especially when you're single, you're like, well, I don't know. Like, I mean, I may as well be, I may as well be in Hawaii if I could, you know, I'm not going to be in Hawaii, but like, it just starts to, you kind of question it even more now. And it's like, do I want to, you know, it's like, what do you, it's hard. And I think for me, when I've, even when, actually when I signed up with that matchmaking agency a few years ago, I remember like one of my thing was that I've always tried to work so that I can actually be online. So that I can choose where I want to be, because until I have a choice, I don't actually know where I want to be. That makes sense, because I'm here because this is where I can work. You know, I have day job. You know, this is not my income here. So, like, you know, I have day jobs and stuff like that. So, but until I have that freedom, so one of the requirements, I remember, I was like, I need someone to be open if we want to relocate.
Yeah,
they have to have the freedom, and that also obviously mean, you know, with their family, whether they have children, so they have to have this. Because I may want to stay here for another 100 years. I may leave in 6 months. You know, this day and age is impossible to say. And the way the world is going, it's really hard to know actually, you know, where is worth staying anymore.
No, and I think it's something that you mentioned with, you know, but you said something that just made me think of, you know, actually how many people mention the importance of meeting someone with an international mindset.
Yes, because
a lot of people, you know, are not from this country. They've traveled a lot for work. They traveled a lot for leisure. You know, they have seen the world and expanded their mind towards, you know, a lot of possibilities. And therefore, they want to connect with someone who understands that too. So even if I, you know, as a person, I haven't traveled that much, but I have lived, you know, in different countries. And like my partner, for example, he hasn't lived, well, he did live in Brussels for a while, but apart from that, he's traveled, you know, a lot. He traveled for like 2 years or more, you know, like on a trot or whatever the expression is, like for these 2 whole years.
Yeah, Globetrotting.
Yeah, Globetrotting, yeah. So that means that, you know, we're on a similar mindset. And yes, also it means that it's like it's easier if we wanted to live somewhere else. And that conversation that we had, you know, quite early, and I guess, you know, should people want to stay here, I guess it's something that I'm tuning into more, is the fact that, like, to keep, and I know some of my friends who are also, you know, not from the UK, but live here, the importance now when they have kids is for the child to speak that native language. And that's been, yes, something that I brought into my relationship quite early, once, you know, we started, you know, speaking about, you know, potential family and things like that, was that, you know, it's important that they speak Swedish. And my dad have even, you know, through me, sent a message to my partner to be like, you know, I really want, you know, your child, yeah, to be speaking Swedish. And I think that's something that, you know, bringing in the importance that, you know, if that is important to you around like your culture and your language and set the expectations of what you want, you know, in your family life.
And you know, it's interesting because, and I think also like with the language, I mean, it's like, why not? Because that's an extra bill, yeah, in the child's,
exactly,
you know, in the child's in CV or whatever it is, like experience, is going to open doors for them. And I think to me it's interesting because I'm very sometimes a bit unclear, because I've found that, so my last partner is British, grew up in England and kind of lived close to where he grew up. So on paper, you'd be like, no way. For Angela? No, I don't know, no way. So it's like, but actually he was, I think, like you said, with the international mindset, I would even say that actually he does have an international mindset in the sense that he's, you know, he's obviously gone on holiday a lot, but he tries and go and find out about the native culture. He doesn't like to go to the specifically the resorts and stuff. He likes the adventure. And also, he's very open-minded, curious-minded, so which is a very important quality for me. Someone who has, I don't care if you've come from, if you live in a village and you've never moved from there, you can be way more open-minded than someone who lives in a big city who's traveled the world sometimes, you know? It's like,
yeah,
so it's like a quality that they've opened in themselves, is that open-minded. Yes. And at the same time, it's like, it's kind of nice to be with someone who has roots. And at the same time, sometimes I'm like, well, maybe for my next relationship, I don't know. So I think it's almost like a quality in a person, but I think it's almost like if they can have this openness to maybe be open to try and knock the country together, if we want to do that, especially in this day and age, you know, we can all work online now. Most of us have to anyway. So it's like, can we, you know, to have the option, because I don't like to feel like I'm trapped somewhere. So I think maybe, I don't know if that's what it is with the international mindset, that we don't want to feel trapped maybe, and we don't know where our roots are. So we need someone who can kind of be willing to pack up and go to try something else and then see. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it's like coming down to, you know, the personal preference. If you know that, you know, as you say, like, you don't want to feel trapped, you know, you have done tremendous work in order to, you know, move like business like online and, you know, being able to, I know that, you know, Corona is Corona, but it sounds like you've done this even before, you know, what's happening right now. And that says a lot about who you are and your personality. And I guess then to be with someone who just don't understand where you're coming from and have done nothing or intend not to put any work into like having a remote way of living, or like can see themselves outside, you know, the city or village or whatever they came from, you know, at some point, is that going to like drive, how is that going to work in theory, you know?
Yeah, how's that going to work? Yeah. And I think it's very much like about someone's character. And I think if someone, because I have met people, even also like when I was in Denmark, you know, I've met people who literally have not been to the next door village. Like,
exactly.
I mean, it's out in the sticks. And those people were so much more accepting of me, who I am. Their mindset was very open compared to people I've met in a big city. So it's like sometimes it's really hard to, it's just a quality, right? But of course, if someone's traveled a lot, they will tend to have more of a open mind, because they can see that there's a lot of other qualities and things to be offered elsewhere, and that where you live is not necessarily the only place to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So I want to hear, you know, about your matchmaking. And do you have any sort of success stories? And the reason why I'm asking this, because I think some of us need a little bit of that. We need some positivity, some hope, you know.
Yes.
It's a hope back in as well. So I'm going to be a bit specific. I'm going to ask, you know, do you have any success stories, especially for those over 40? Now, I'm 42. I turned 42 in November.
Mm-hmm. So, November.
Yeah, Scorpio.
Yes. Same.
Oh, there you go. This is what we talk about, sex. So, do you have any success story with your members that you could share with the audience, just to give them a bit of hope? You know,
Yeah, no, so it's been some beautiful stories that I can tell you about. So, like, as a company, we've been around for like a year and a half, and the matchmaking officially started in January. So then, of course, in March, you know, we had COVID. But nonetheless, you know, like, everyone has been so supportive, and it's been beautiful to see that people have really given people, you know, the time of day. We have had a lot of examples whereby members have met like early when the first lockdown happened, and they continue to be in touch and, you know, speak throughout until they could actually meet in June and July, which I found to be a real testament in terms of like people being able to just freely be who they are, especially in a time that was quite challenging.
So were these people that you matched during lockdown?
Yes.
And they kept the conversation going for what, from March to June, and then met
yes.
in June?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then they've had a few dates and continue to this day, which is really lovely. So we always want to, you know, like, see how they're getting on. But equally, we understand that, you know, it's taking, you know, the privacy towards forming the connection and continue to explore. But it's been lovely to hear that they, you know, even that it wasn't like, oh, we can't meet up, what's the point? They were just like, okay, let's really get to know this person, which we found was beautiful. We've also had two or four members, I suppose, so four members who got introduced, so two different couples, if we can call them that yet, who have also met each other through the Tailor Match community. And they continue to go to like online workshops, even though they haven't been able to meet up. But they continue to let us know that, oh, we've gone to this workshop. Like, I've never met anyone who I've been able to be so, you know, open with about who I am and my aspirations and, like, you know, my kinks and things like that. And, you know, they're beautiful inside out, and we can't wait to meet when we are allowed.
So they've gone on online workshops, like for what, for example, like group workshops or individual?
No, I think it's been some, they didn't say in specific, but if I would put my two cents towards it, I think it's like sex education workshops.
Okay. They've put in quite a lot of work before even meeting and knowing if they, because that, I mean, how long is that? Like, is that several months then they've been talking?
So it's been a couple of people they met, you know, they were to were getting to know each other for a couple of months, and then they met in the summer. And then it was a couple of people that we that we've had feedback from who was introduced, I think, maybe like a month and a half ago. So that was also like just before the second lockdown. And what we always recommend people to do is to have a Zoom date, you know, voice notes and like video chats and all those things. And what we're really proud of is that people really give, because they know that a lot of work has gone into, you know, introducing them to someone on their own wavelength, and they can really see that. And this is why they continue to take the time, which is really beautiful. You know, it's not treated like
They're investing because now, like, they've gone through the process of this, the matchmaking. They also get to know each other, so they're building a connection before meeting, so they're more invested.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, because it can be very easy to just treat it like dating apps. It's like, oh, I'm not so sure we can ever meet. Okay, next. You know, but it's really nice to see. And like, we've had so much feedback as well, you know, men and women being like, you know, we've never, like, we just had a 3-hour conversation the first time we've ever chatted. Or like, I've never had so much fun on a Zoom date. You know, people really see the compatibility and, you know, that people are like open-minded, which is just really beautiful to hear. I'm always happy when people really feel that they started to build that connection. But it really makes me happy when people, you know, are attending like online workshops, continue to learn for themselves, and also, you know, as them two together, which brings me a lot of joy.
And I think also eventually they will have to meet in person, even if this COVID carries on, because, you know, I think I've had this experience, you know, during lockdown, meeting someone phone and stuff and then Zoom. And initially, I think they're the best dates I've ever had. And then we met in person. It was absolutely amazing. And I think it does build a connection. And I think, yes. But I think eventually, like the reason why I say about in person is because there is this almost this tension, because you don't know until you meet someone in person.
Exactly.
Because even though Zoom can tell you a lot, but when you meet in person, you get, you know, someone's scent. You, even if you're not that close, but there's something about them, the mannerism, their vibe, the charisma that yes. you can't always translate over Zoom or video call. And it confirms, like, you know, it almost closes the deal a little bit.
Exactly.
You know? It helps you to, but it's a beautiful story arc that, you know, talking for hours on the phone for a few weeks, getting to know each other. It's absolutely fantastic because you don't get to do that.
No. Yeah, exactly. No, it's really nice. And as you say, you know, it's like that, you know, meeting in person as well, which some of them have done. And some members have actually gone on to pause their membership because they really want to continue to explore that introduction that we've been able to offer, which, I know we've been, you know, around for quite a while as a company, but the matchmaking arm only since January. So that's really beautiful to see so much, you know, evidence of the work that we do,
yeah,
and you
absolutely.
Know why people come
absolutely.
To us so early in the journey, which is really nice. And I guess, you know, especially in the time, you know, that is quite hard for many to be able to just like introduce, you know, a new person into their life whom they get on really well with, and more importantly, they can be exactly who they are with that person.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Look, this has been absolutely wonderful, Åsa. I want to ask you the finishing thoughts, the finishing questions that I ask all my guests. And there's two. And the first one is, what would you tell your 18-year-old self?
I would tell my 18-year-old self that I am worthy of love. I would tell my 18-year-old self to, you know, just go with the flow a little bit and enjoy the ride and enjoy the journey. And I would tell my 18-year-old self to trust my gut feel and just go after what's important to me.
Yeah. That's lovely. And the second one is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
What I would not put up with anymore?
Yes.
I would not put up with people who are close-minded.
And also, can you please tell us, where can we find you and where can people work with you?
So you can visit our website, which is tailormatched.com. So it's tailor as in tailoring, so T-A-I-L-O-R. And we're also on Instagram, tailormatched. And you can email me on hello@tailormatched.com.
Thank you so much, Åsa, for being so open with me and willing to play with me in this episode. This has been really wonderful. And I'm really glad that, you know, you've already seen some success, you know, despite doing it in the worst, most challenging yeah. time, really. So this is quite obviously a testament to what you do. And so I am really looking forward to see how you grow and how many couples you hitch together.
Yes.
It's exciting. We need more love in this world. We need more love and more kindness.
Yeah. No, and thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. And it's so important that, you know, we continue to have this conversation in very openly. So thank you so much for facilitating that as well.
You're very welcome, Åsa. Thank you so much. And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week. And until then,
use an elf inappropriately.